Welcome to the NHL Wraparound Podcast, featuring Neil Smith, President, General Manager of the 1994 Stanley Cup champion New York Rangers, and longtime ESPN NHL veteran Vic Morin. Together, they share no-nonsense opinions on news and issues around the National Hockey League. Whether you're a casual or diehard fan, each episode of NHL Wraparound will leave you more informed. Now, here's your hosts, Neil and Vic.
Welcome to 1990 Forever, a five-part series sponsored by MyGray and the Game 7 Group, commemorating the 30th anniversary of the New York Rangers' 1994 championship season. In our first show, goalie Glenn Healy and former MSG TV analyst John Davidson took us through the regular season plus much more. This episode, Quick Path to the Eastern Conference Final, focuses on the series versus the New York Islanders and the Washington Capitals. Joining Neil and me to look back, Hall of Fame defenseman Kevin Lowe and one of the best two-way forwards in NHL history, right wing Steve Larmer. But first, a word from MyGray.
From Howe to Hughes, from Béliveau to Bedard, we're your source for game-worn jerseys. Go to MyGray.com, MEIGRAY.com, to start your collection today. Get real. Get it from MyGray.
Welcome back to 1990 Forever, Episode 2, Quick Path to the Eastern Conference Final. And I want to welcome in my partner on the NHL Wraparound Podcast and President and General Manager of the 1994 New York Rangers, Neil Smith. And also, Hall of Fame defenseman, six-time Stanley Cup champion, Kevin Lowe, and one of the best two-way players the NHL has ever seen, and the only man that worked beyond the final buzzer on June 14th, 1994, pinning Jeff Brown against the boards, Steve Larmer. Welcome, everybody.
Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Rick.
So, Neil, you know, you come into this series as the President's Trophy winners, magnificent regular season, team records and points and wins, but New York Islanders were always a little bit of a nemesis for you. Now, this was your second go against the Isles. You played them and took them out of five games in 1990, but any reservations coming in as the favorite and also knowing that maybe the underdog Islanders were going to relish this role in having a chance to knock off the President's Trophy winners?
Well, I remember that there was a lot of media, WFAN, New York Post shenanigans about, oh, this is the worst team they could face in the first round. Islanders always beat them, and this is a bad matchup for the Rangers. And, you know, at that point, I really think that most of the, you know, like the New York Post and that, they were hoping we never won so that they could keep up with this 54, 55, 56 year thing. That's really what I remember. Of course, when you play a rival, not only do you want to win a series, but you want to beat the rival because you're going to get your face rubbed in it all the time. But I was very confident in the group that we had, and after what we'd done at the trade deadline and then the way we'd played those last 12 games of the regular season, I was very confident, or as confident as you can be when you have absolutely no control over anything.
Well, when you talk about the rivalry piece, Kevin, you had played the Calgary Flames as a member of the Edmonton Oilers in five playoff series. And Steve, you had your Norris division wars with Detroit and St. Louis and Toronto. Kevin, you first, any expectations coming in terms of what this rivalry was going to look like?
Well, I had seen, you know, watched the Islander Ranger rivalry from afar for a lot of years, you know, great series. I remember when the Rangers went to the finals in 1979, and, you know, the great teams they had prior to that. And then, of course, the Islanders were coming along. When I arrived to New York, first game on Long Island, I didn't know about the 1940 chat. I had asked the trainers, what the heck is that? And I thought, wow, that's a long time. But like any rivalry, you know, there's always more meat on the bone when you play those games, and playing against the Islanders. You know, my recollection of them, they were a little bit younger, a little greener, but they had lots of drive. And even though we swept them, it was a tougher series, like they always are, that appears on the paper when you see a 4-0 sweep.
Steve, how about you? Just comparing what you were about to experience in the New York-New York rivalry compared to your experiences in the Norris division.
Well, I think you play these series against teams that you play all the time, and, you know, playing against Detroit and St. Louis and Toronto and Minnesota, we had some epic battles, I guess, against some of those teams. So I think you kind of understand the rivalry a little bit, you know, like Kevin Wood with the Battle of Alberta and, you know, the New York Ranger, the New York Islander thing going on. So I think, you know, the intensity level, I think, was already, for a lot of us, we had already been through that before with the teams that we played on before and in the divisions that we played against. But like Kevin, it was like, what's 1940? What's it got to do with everything that's going on here? And having to ask some people, like, okay, so the Rangers haven't won since 1940? It's like, wow, I didn't know that. So it made it even more special, I think, once, you get through that round. And, you know, like Kevin said, it was a lot closer than it might seem, sweeping them in four games. But I think it's a necessity in the first round to get through that round as quick as you can and as healthy as you can, too.
But, Neil, you know, we talk about, you know, that all series are tougher than they look. But you open up, game one is a complete thrashing, 6-0, and it really wasn't close. But in game two, Mike Richter had to make 13 saves in like the first 10 minutes of the game. And I think that really speaks to what Steve and Kevin were saying, was that, you know, the Islanders' opportunity to get back in the series was right there. And when Richter stonewalled them, then Rangers had the last 15 shots of the first period, and that game ended up 6-0 as well. And you guys were off and running.
You know, I was so used to Ricky bailing us out so many nights during all the years that I had been there, including, you know, years before the Stanley Cup year, that it wasn't unusual to see us sort of start out slow or something. And of course, Ricky did what Ricky could do. And all of a sudden we woke up and, you know, end up killing the other team. They had Ron Hextall in net, by the way, in those two games, because we had stolen Glenn Healy from them in the summer. That was just Mike Richter. He could do that. I remember one night we went in to play Vancouver Canucks, either a season before or a season after. I don't know if you guys were on the team that year, but we were just terrible. It was a regular season game. I think they had 50-something shots, and we got a tie out of the game. I mean, we didn't deserve to get half a point, let alone 1 point. But it was a Mike Richter, completely the Mike Richter show. And I know, Kevin, you must have tons of stories about Ricky, because you being a defenseman with Zuby that season and for the other seasons also.
Yeah, I used to get asked the question all the time about playing in front of Andy Moog and Grant Fear, who's a better goalie. I said, I really can't tell you because I never see what they do. I'm always facing the other way. A little bit about Rick. I mean, he was such a great goalie. Of course, he had the majority of the workload. But Glenn Healy was a perfect complement to Mike in the dressing room, and Glenn was a sound addition to the team, gave the Rangers that security or insurance that in the event that Mike Richter got hurt, that you had someone there. But I just remember those two in the dressing room. Larms, you remember that? I mean, I've never heard two goalies talk more. It was almost like, okay, will you two just shut up and let us concentrate on the game? You know, they were just gabbing back and forth. But Ricky was a lot like Grant Fuhr and Andy Moog. And Heels to some extent, although I didn't play a ton in front of him in terms of, it was never anybody else's fault. You know, I'd say to Ricky, oh, Ricky, I should have had that guy backside. And he said, no, Losey, that's my fault. I should have blocked the pass, you know. And I think that's what you have in championship teams. You have a lot of, you know, there's not too much finger pointing and there's more taking responsibility of your play. And it, you know, since we're on the subject of the Islanders, I just wanted to share the last little piece of that story. Of course, we had lots of history, meaning the Oilers with the Islanders and losing that, getting swept by them in 83, then winning our first cup in Edmonton in 84. But I'll never forget leaving after game four, that first series with the Rangers in 1994. And I think it was an afternoon game that day, if I recall, because when we were walking out of Nassau Coliseum, it was beautiful outside, and we were walking up the ramp, you know, where the buses go up to the road level, and the fans were hanging over the side, and it was Mess and Mac T and myself, and our wives actually, and the fans were yelling at us like we just beat the Islanders, we just swept them, and said, "You guys suck. You're too old. You're not going to get anywhere." You know, and it's like, you're hurting our feelings. We feel good about ourselves. We just thought whatever, like, you bunch of old, you know, you're not going to get by the next series. Typical fans in a rivalry and Islander fans.
That was.
Well, I wanted to follow. Go ahead, Steve.
No, I was going to say, but both Glenn and Mike had the gift of the gab, so it was always hard to get a word in edgewise with those. With those two, and they did compliment each other very well. And Kevin's so right. There was zero finger pointing that went on in that dressing room, you know, at any point in time, you know, from, you know, not in the regular season and most definitely not in the playoffs. And we were fortunate to have, you know, for me, it was a pleasure to play with Kevin and Mac T, and when Andy got there, and Jeff Bookaboom and Mark that had won all these cups, and there was just a real calmness about them in the dressing room. No matter, you know, if we could have lost 10-0 or we could have won 10-0, but the mood was always the same. They really kept everything nice and low key and level headed, and it made for a great run and a lot of fun playing.
Kev, I wanted to double back to earlier in the series, because certainly with Edmonton, you were used to dominating teams. And I even remember in the Boys in the Bus documentary, which you did such a great job narrating. And you had said in the Vancouver series in 1986, which preceded the loss to Calgary, that something didn't feel right, that it was too easy. And after the first two games, the back-to-back shutouts, was there any sense of that? I mean, there were, you know, you had so many Oiler teammates, you know, with Mess and Book and you know, and Glenn Anderson and the like. Was there any sense that, okay, you know, we still got to keep our guard up going into game three?
Yeah, no question. I mean, you learn from experience that every game in the playoffs takes on a completely different look. And park the previous game, whether it was a win or loss. And in this case, we had, you know, we had 2 6-0 games, as we just discussed. And you know, everybody's competitive. They're going to be fired up. The Islanders would be probably a little embarrassed about it. You know, I didn't read the media too much in those days, but I suspect they were, you know, the media weren't treating them very well and almost talking about them maybe not belonging, regardless of the fact that Mike Richter had to play so well at the start of game two. But at the end of the day, it's still a 6-0 win and back-to-back. So, you know, in all the playoff series, I was always fearful of really beating someone bad in a game, because it gave them extra fuel for the fire. The playoffs should be enough. But, you know, as professional athletes here, you just gravitate to whatever you can to motivate yourself, and winning those two games the way we did. You know, I knew we were walking into a lion's den, into the Coliseum for game three.
So, Neil and Steve, you go into Nassau and you wind up winning 5-1. And by the end of that game, the power play is 6-for-21. The penalty killing is 15-for-15. The special teams are absolutely off the charts. So, Neil, first of all, you've got to feel that boy, I have really put this all together. And Steve, you know, for you, you know, to be, you know, part of special teams, penalty killing, it just all had to feel like it was coming together. And that first game on the road really had to exemplify what this team was going to be all about for the long run.
You know, first of all, I just want to mention that there was, I didn't think about myself at all. All I thought about was we, and that we got a chance and, you know, we're going to get through this series, and you're breathing a sigh of relief when you get up 3-0 and I'm doing the math in my head saying, well, you know, teams usually don't, it's really tough to come back from down 3-0. But even where I was sitting in the press box, I didn't think it was over until I heard that buzzer in the fourth game. And that's when you finally, you know, allowed yourself to enjoy that moment, because as Kevin said, every game is different. Everything can take on you don't know if somebody could get injured. You don't know if Mike Richter could have got injured or something. We don't know what each game's going to bring. And in my chair, you're confident that you've got a good group now, but you're just always nervous. As Kevin knows from being a GM for years, you never stop being nervous until that buzzer goes and you've actually won something. And then all you do after you've won something is fret about the next series and you know, worry about that. But
that's funny. No, I think it's so much easier playing than it is watching. And you have some control over the outcome of the game or whatnot. And I think, you know, you talk about special teams and having, a great power play and penalty killing. And you need all of that to come together at the right time of the year. And it makes a big difference, I think, in the playoffs when everything gets tightened up and games get closer and a little bit more intense. So when you get those opportunities on the power play, you got to take advantage of them for sure.
In the fourth game, Kevin, guys spot the Islanders a 2-0 lead, and it was almost like, you know, let's give them a little bit of bait here. Let's give them a little bit of something to hope about before we squash it. And, you know, before the end of the period, you guys are back in the game. You go ahead, and who else but Mess to put the exclamation point on the series with a breakaway against Hextall?
Yeah, I always had a lot of confidence when I saw Mess with the puck, particularly on a breakaway or in any big game. You know, he was going to rise to the occasion as he most famously did a couple series later, but many times prior to that I'd seen in Edmonton. And he, I think in his career, not so much after Wayne left and his time in New York, but certainly sometimes with the Oilers in the 80s, if it wasn't a big game, he'd be a little bored, you know. There needed to be some action on the line, and that's what he really rose and always met it. So, yeah, you're right. And for me, coming to New York, it was extra special. I mean, it's a fantastic city, great organization. There's a time in my career where it was nice to have a change, but I really went there because of Mess, you know, and because we had, you know, we'd won a fifth cup together in Edmonton without Wayne, and it was going to be could potentially be really cool to win a cup in New York, but particularly a cup with him.
Steve, how about for you? You know, you hadn't had that kind of success. You are now surrounded by all of these players that have won championships. Now you win this first series in decisive fashion. Just what's the feeling for you that has felt different than probably anything that you'd experienced in your hockey career before?
Well, I think we played against Edmonton so many times in the playoffs, and in the year that we did beat them in the semifinals, I think we went on and we played Pittsburgh, and you know, we lost to them 4 straight, but it was kind of like our Stanley Cup was getting over the hump and beating Edmonton that 1 year that we ended up against them in the Western Conference Finals. But it was, I think at the very beginning, it's a little difficult to walk into that dressing room with all of these guys that you have played against and whatnot, that especially the ones that came from Edmonton and whatnot, but they were as warm and as welcoming as anybody I've ever met in my life. And it was just a real pleasure for me to, you know, be in the same dressing room and learn from them. And you know, I think that their leadership throughout, not just the regular season, but especially in the playoffs when things got a little bit more intense and tighter, was a huge reason why we ended up winning the Stanley Cup. And as you all know, we had Mike Keenan as our coach and whatnot, and he could get a little too intense and whatnot, but it was nice to have, you know, Mark and Kevin and Book and Craig McTavish around to kind of keep him in check too, because it's a different feeling when you get there and you haven't won it, and sometimes you don't know how to act or how to react to different things. And they just did a really, really good job of keeping our dressing room together and making everybody feel like they were the most important part of the team.
Neil, could you see that from the GM chair?
Part of my philosophy on how to build a winner, because I had watched the Oilers teams and I had been very close up to the Islander teams in those four cups, was to try to get people who had experience winning the championship. I was lucky in my career that Mark became available when he did, and we were able to do that. But then once you see the impact, and I knew, but I didn't know the impact that Mark would have on the organization. I famously said in the press conference that the logo will be a little bit different for Mark having been here. There'll be something you might not be able to see with your eyes, but there'll be something different in the logo. And I know to this day, 30 years later, that I'm right. There's something different because of Mark. And I think all of us would say that. And then when Kevin becomes available, who was the captain after Mark, and everybody knew Kevin Lowe and everybody knew his quality of character and of everything, then it was, for me, it was it was something I had to do. Then there were other Oilers that we just became available. And sometimes I had to give up a lot, like Doug Waite for Esa Tiikkanen. It ended up working for us because Tick was a big part of that winning that year. But I knew that the guys, the mature guys, and when I say mature, I mean McTavish and Kevin Lowe and Mark Messier and even Glenn Anderson in his way, that these guys knew to keep the team from being rattled. When you'd get guys, for example, Brian Leetch, fantastic Hall of Fame defenseman, but he didn't have the experience of knowing how to win. And that if, you know, in the Vancouver series that we're going to talk about sometime, you know, you think you're going to win in five and you lost. Like, it was the Oiler guys and the guys that have been there that kept everybody from, you know, panicking. And I knew that would happen because I knew that's what winners would do. They would say, hey, wait a minute, I remember when we lost to the LA Kings and these things happened, you know. So from my chair, yeah, I was nervous, but I wasn't surprised because that's actually what I was hoping would happen. And I'd already had a couple of years with Mark and I'd had 1 year with Kevin, and I knew that that's what they would do. So, you know, adding Glenn Anderson in was just like easy, because you're like saying, okay, this was Mark's roommate and this is a guy that's also won five Stanley Cups and he's going to fit right in. So, it was just an awesome, awesome group of guys. And it took those five-time champions to be able to deliver one championship to New York. Like, that's how difficult it was to win in New York, that it took us loading up with Stanley Cup winners to be able to deliver Just one win for New York. Just for goodness sakes, can we get just one? We're not asking for five. We're just asking for one.
Nobody wants to be greedy.
Yeah.
You know, and Neil did such an amazing job piecing that team together. And, you know, the team already had game breakers in Brian Leetch and Mike Richter and Nets. And Kovalev was coming, and Sergei Zubov. I mean, those guys are. Adam Graves was maturing in to be an unbelievable player. So those are game breakers. But he filled in with a lot of blue collar sort of guys that wanted to, you know, do the stuff, the rest of the stuff around the outside. But everybody had amazing hockey sense, amazing ability to do the right thing within the game, and that's so critical. And then just touching on what Larm said with Mike Keenan, he did a great job as well. It was a different team. I don't think we practiced our penalty kill once all season. We talked a lot about it. We had meetings and the power play. There wasn't a ton of coaching going on, and yet I think we're number one in both. But Mike knew how to pull the right strings. But where the experience comes in is after we lost game six in Vancouver, and Neil, you'll remember this. You know, Mike, we were on our way home, I think, the next day in the plane, and Mike didn't want to go back to New York. He thought there was going to be too many distractions because we have an extra day off, and he thought we should go somewhere else and just sort of stay as a team. And I remember Mark looking at Mike saying, Mike, are you crazy? What do you think going to somewhere else is going to make a difference? It's like, If you can't get motivated for game seven of the Stanley Cup Finals and do all that, then going to some other city is not going to make a difference. And, you know, if it hadn't been for a guy like Mark, you know, who knows, that plane might have gone to Lake Placid or wherever it was going to go. And, you know, those are the little things. That's when they talk about experience, Stanley Cup experience, those are some of the things that happen.
Yeah, because I know when I played in Chicago for Mike and during the playoffs and that, he would have us often stay in the hotels in our hometown the night before games, and just to keep us kind of away from everything and together as a team. And I can remember in New York with Mark saying, no, the guys need to keep it as normal as possible. We have an older team. We have we don't have wacko guys that are going to be out all night and doing silly stuff. So you need to trust them. The routine and getting home to see their families and their kids is important to them. So keep it as normal as possible. And I think, like you say, through all of that experience, it really came to the forefront then.
Neil, from your perspective now, you got one series in the books. We're going to hit Washington in a second. But just the sense around the team of winning the President's Trophy, sweeping the Islanders, is there now a sense of, okay, you know, we are really establishing ourselves as the powerhouse going forward into the second round against Washington? What's just the overall sense? Neil, Steve, and Kevin, please answer that one as we wrap up the Islander series.
Again, for me, and I'll be quick on this one because – you know, I had one night of after the Coliseum of being happy, and then all you start doing is worrying from then on. Because the thing about winning the President's Trophy, as you know from modern times, is that it's great to win it, but if you get knocked out in the playoffs, they're going to criticize you for winning the President's Trophy and not being able to win go the whole way. So there's a sort of a double-edged sword there. It's like, you know, for 6 months, the team earned the President's Trophy, and now we're going to go into a series of sprints here at the end, and you better win all those sprints or we're going to just laugh at you for winning the marathon earlier in the year. So from the GM seat, all you do is start worrying again. It's totally with the coaches and the players. You just got to hope that you did the right things.
Yeah, I mean, I think Neil, you did a great job of putting the right pieces in the right places at the right time. And I think we had, we had a lot of experience on that team, not just with the Edmonton Oilers guys, but a lot of older players that were playing, you know, the Greg Gilberts and the Dougie Listers, the Jay Wells and things like that, or players like that, that everybody kind of knew their role and everybody was rooting for everybody, no matter who was in the lineup or who was out of the lineup. And we had great depth on our team where we could get, you know, where there was trust in playing that third and the fourth line on a regular basis. So you weren't just playing your first and second line all the time and wearing them out over the course of the series. So it was, a great group of guys that we had a great dressing room. And it was, you did a great job of putting it together. You were a great architect for it. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, on that note, touching on some of the names that Steve just mentioned, you know, you think on the back end, Jay Wells and I were the same age. We were 34 or 35 years old. Doug Listers was about a year younger, so 33 or 34. We weren't a young team, and so sweeping the Islanders was very important. We had a good, you know, good break, I mean, if I look back on our playoffs over the years with the Oilers, it was always important to finish series, you know, quick and as short a time as possible, because, you know, the further you go along, the more difficult it's going to be. So I think the fact that we did sweep the Islanders, you know, gave us the ability to regenerate and be prepared to play the Capitals and a little more difficult series, but beat them in five. So many game breakers, a great goaltender, and then so many smart hockey players. It's a tough formula to beat for anybody. It was obvious we won the cup, but particularly in the early series.
Four down, 12 to go, and we're going to unpack the Washington series right after this. Game 7 has a magic attached to it like nothing in sport. In order to prevail, teamwork is essential to achieving success. At the Game 7 Group, transforming individuals into cohesive teams is the core philosophy in their team-building approach. Their belief is every team has potential to achieve extraordinary results. Game 7 Group offers various services to help teams accomplish their goals through specific team-building events, coaching, and speaking engagements. These services are aimed at improving team dynamics, productivity, and overall performance. Face it, we all want to be able to succeed in the big moment. Check out the Game 7 Group website at game7group.com/NHL wraparound to learn more. Right now, a special incentive offer awaits our podcast listeners. Take your team to the next step. The Game 7 Group will get you there.
Time now for a quick shout out to our sponsor. NHL Wraparound is brought to you by MyGray, your source for game worn jerseys. Head to MyGray.com to get your collection started today. Get real, get it from MyGray. NHL Wraparound subscribers can take 10% off any hockey jersey when they order at MyGray.com and use the coupon code WRAP10. Don't forget that coupon code, WRAP10.
Welcome back to NHL Wraparound, the special 1990 Forever series of the New York Rangers 1994 Stanley Cup Championship. This is episode 2, Quick Path to the Eastern Conference Final. We just finished up with the Rangers 4-game sweep of the New York Islanders, and now we're going to hit the series against Washington. And Neil, the Capitals have been a problematic opponent really from the day they came into the NHL in 1974. Of course, they defeated the Rangers in 5 games, the infamous John Drew series in 1990, and then in 6 games in 1991. And that series, after the defeat, that's probably as angry as I have ever heard you after a playoff series, or any time for that matter.
Well, yeah, and there was a little bit of staged anger, and that, why it was is because I was trying to protect Roger Nielsen, who I could see the knives were coming out for Roger. for losing in the first round. And I thought that the blame should lay on the players who, you know, instead of on Roger Nielsen, who I knew prepared them well and had done a good job. And so I was very angry about going out in the first round. And I also wanted to send a message to the organization that this was not acceptable. To lose in the first round was not acceptable. And so that actually, though, that loss to Washington spurred the whole thing about going out and signing Adam Graves and then trading for Mark shortly after that. And then Book, of course, came in the Mark trade. And suddenly, you know, the next season were way better. But in that loss in 1991, that was what really spurred the whole makeover. Thank goodness we did that. And that's when the logo changed from, I don't want to say losers because I don't like using that, but a not a winning culture to a winning culture. It changed because we went out and got winners. And it might have been all because of that loss to the Capitals.
So you come into this series and 7 days off between the Islanders sweep and starting against Washington. Any concerns, Steve, about the team being rusty and opening up at home against a team that had obviously given the Rangers problems in past playoffs?
Well, I think the only thing you're worried about is when you have that much time off in between series is, you know, what's the first game going to be like? Because that's the game that if the other team's played a longer series and hasn't had as much time off, will maybe get a jump on you in the first period or the second period, in the first game for that matter, because I think a lot of those teams will win the first game against the team that's had the longer break. But I don't think there was a really much of that concern in our dressing room with regards to, you know, I think we had a couple of days off and then it was back to work as usual and riding bikes out in the back of Rye Playland there with Howie, and the sunshine was nice. I mean, we're not doing this to you. We're doing it for you to make you better. Right. But, no, it was, like I said, an older, wiser team, I think, that knew how to take care of themselves away from the game, too, and use that downtime properly. And when it was time to get back on the ice, you know, you put your work in and you get prepared for the next series because it's, you know, I think, you know, having all of that experience, you know, that with every round in the playoffs, the one thing that you do know is it only ever gets harder. It never gets easier. So, and I think we were well prepared for that.
Go ahead, Kev.
Yeah, Neil touched on, and again, I don't watch a lot of hockey during the regular season when I was a player, but of course I watched all the playoffs. Being out west, you'd have the luxury to watch the early games and then, of course, the later games. And I know that the Capitals had been a bit, not a rival like the Islanders, but they had those series. And the Capitals had a lot of smart players on their team, and they had some gritty guys. And so knew it was going to be a more difficult series. Having the extra time off, we're more than prepared and ready to go. But, didn't go in the series. I always had confidence, we can win, can win a game, can win a championship, but there's, the other team's feeling the same way. And I have to say, I probably would have been a little more leery of the Capitals, quite honestly, at that juncture of the season than maybe even when we played the Devils. Now, of course, the Devils ended up being a more difficult series, but it just seemed that the Capitals sort of had a history of rising in the playoffs. So, and maybe because of that, we're that much more prepared. We're certainly that much more rested. So although it was a difficult series, we were able to, finish them off in a fairly short time.
Anything about their style of play that was particularly concerning coming into this series?
Well, I think that they, you know, they were a pretty disciplined team. And that, like I mentioned, they had a lot of smart players. And also they had guys that were, you know, savvy playoff players, you know. You know, it gets a little grittier, can get a little dirtier in the playoffs. And they had a bunch of those guys. So fortunately enough, we had a bunch of those guys as well. So I think we just were able to trump them a little bit. But, you know, and you know that, you know that it was going to be a physical series. You know, if you're playing against guys that have had a history of having some success, like many of those Capital players did, if they're not going to win the series, they're going to get their pound of flesh off of you. So, you know, you're obviously trying to win, but you're obviously trying to survive so you can move on to the next series.
Yeah. So one of your former Oiler teammates and then your current teammate in New York, Esatikinen, winds up becoming a real focal point of the series. He scores the game-winning goal during a delayed penalty in game two to help put the team ahead. And then in game three, it's 3-0. Game is completely in control. I mean, this team is on top of the world right now, and he offers up a little smooch to the current Flyer president, Keith Jones. And probably one of the most memorable images of the entire playoffs was Tekin and puckering up.
Well, for the day that kid arrived in Edmonton, we're seeing a different player, a completely different player. He rolled in, I hate to go back in history, but it sort of sets up why, you know, the story you just told. He played his first ever game in the NHL in the Stanley Cup finals against the Flyers. And then we won that game and we were on a plane back to Edmonton. We're usually the ownership or the management and ownership sit up front and the players sit in the back. And here was this young guy who was up with a beer in his hand, up at the front of the plane, talking to everybody at the front of the plane. And it turns out the owner had his daughter there, and Tick was trying to make a move on his daughter. And it was like, who is this guy? Like, who does that? And then, of course, we learned to love and appreciate all the things, even his language. We called it Tickenese. Like, it wasn't English, it wasn't Finnish. It was just nobody. The Finns didn't understand, the English guys didn't understand. So no surprise that he did that to Keith Jones, but he was a heck of a playoff performer. And, you know, you'd want to go to battle anytime in the playoffs with that guy.
Yeah, he was a...
Steve, what do you remember most?
Well, he was a special player. Like, I never, he could play every position. The only position I never seen him play was goalie. And he probably could have done that very well. But, you know, he could play defense, he could run, you know, he could run the power play from any position, but he could play defense on a regular shift, he could play any wing, he could play center, and he could be one of the best players, you know, in the league at playing any one of those positions. But like Kevin says, I mean, he spoke Tekenese, so I could play with him a lot during that year when I was there. And, you know, you're out in the ice with him. He's telling you what to do when he's playing center, and he's telling you what to do when he's playing wing or defense anyway. So, but he's always telling you what to do, but you could never understand him. So you would just look at him and smile and go, yeah, 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 right? But he could speak five languages, I think, but not one of them well.
And yeah, you had to know what you were getting in this guy. I mean, had a tremendous shot, which I don't think a lot of people really appreciated, but also had the propensity to get the big goal. And Kevin, I know, you know, you played in a playoff series with him in just a phenomenal series against Calgary in 1991, where he scored a hat trick in game seven, including the overtime winner against Mike Vernon. And Neil, just, you know, going back to what I just said, you had to know this was a real special player, a real unique athlete that you had to really help solidify this team.
Well, he was the two players that I remember in my career trading for who I absolutely hated when they were with other teams was Asa Tikkanen and Ulf Samuelsson. Because you just hate those guys. When you're watching games from the press box in Pittsburgh and Ulf Samuelsson's doing his routine, and yet he was a fan favorite amongst the Penguin fans. And Asa Tikkanen, I've watched him for years and marveled at the Oilers and you know how good they were. But they had this agitator in Asa Tikkanen. But what really pissed you off about him was that he was an agitator, but he was also a good player. And so, like, it's like, damn, how do you beat this guy? You can't beat him up because he knew ways to get around that. And then he's going to score on you as well. So he's going to piss you off and score on you at the same time. So when he became available, and the price was really steep. I mean, when you look back, Doug Weight was a good young player. I was a scout at heart. We had drafted him in the second round. He was a steal in the second round. I thought he might be a tad slow to become what he did become. I'm sure Kevin and Larms, you'll remember that he sort of planted his feet and then made these great passes, but he wasn't a guy that had a lot of speed. He didn't do things at high speed. He sort of did things like he'd do some marvelous stick work, but then his feet were planted and then he would do a thing. And I always wondered, would he be able to do all these things in with that style? Obviously he did. He went on to have a fantastic career, including in Edmonton. But Tick was a high price to pay for Tick. And then, but without Tick, we don't win the cup. I mean, without any, I don't care whether you're talking about Eddie Olchuk, or you're talking about Mike Hartman, or you're talking about Nick Kiprios, or you're talking about Benny in the dressing room. Without all those guys, you don't win the cup, in my opinion. You got to have every single one of those guys.
Oh, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, the depth that we had on that team, and if somebody did get hurt and somebody had to come out of the lineup and somebody went in, it was like a well-oiled machine. It just kept chugging along and doing what it was supposed to do.
So it's 7 straight out of the gate to open the playoffs. There's already whispers of 16-0 starting to ring through the New York media. Of course, you know, in game 4, you get the quick goal from Graves, and then the Caps come back. They get 4. You get 1 back on a major penalty and almost had a chance to get back into the game, but ultimately fall 4-2 for the first loss in the playoffs. So you go back to the Garden. It's 3-1. You get a quick goal. And then shades of the 92 playoffs, Neil, where Kevin Hatcher sends a shot 150 feet down the ice that bounces past Richter. And this brings to mind the Ron Francis goal in round 2, which basically flipped that series. So at that point, what is the sense here that it's deja vu all over again, or are we, let's just regroup and get this thing back on the rails?
Well, it was I'm sorry, refresh my memory. Did we lose that game when Hatcher scored from way out?
No, this was game 5. You wind up winning the game. Yep.
Yeah. So when that goal went in, I mean, I don't remember being really worried about the series. It was just one of those things that, you know, I've watched many bad goals go in from way up there as Kevin has too, from being, whenever you're up in that GM perch, you see some things that the next day, however, you find out that it was your fault that Mike Richter let that in from center somehow, because you're the GM. But anyway, I didn't worry about that, but I got a great story about that goal going in. So I'm watching that and I see, oh shit, you know, bad bounce, particularly bad bounce. And now we've won the series. And I go down to the coach's room as I always did. And as soon as I walk in, Keenan looks at me and he goes, are the pucks frozen here? I look at him like, how the fuck would I know? I'm not the guy in the penalty box with the pucks, Mike. Well, they should be frozen. I was like, okay, well, congratulations to you too. You know, we just won the series. But it was like, this was the shit that you put up with this guy. Was, you know, the president and GM of the team came down and the first thing out of his mouth was like, as if you're some flunky you know, working at MSG, freezing pucks or running the Zamboni. So, you know, I had to, you guys know what I was putting up with that year, but anyway, that's just one great Mike story from me.
Well, Kevin and Steve, I mean, what was going on the bench at that time where, you know, you got to regroup, game was only 1-1, but still, you know, there's a little bit of history with your goalie. Your goalie knows that. Richter knows what happened 2 years earlier. So what's the sense on the bench at that time?
You know, I remember it all well, and not having been, you know, a part of it, you know, feeling comfortable that we're still in this thing, but thinking, oh, they if they win this game, we're going back there, and this could be a longer series, and all those things. I mean, we were able to ramp it up past, you know, after that, and obviously win the series, but no question, those things run through your mind. You're human beings, right? You just kind of process it, not in a bad way, but it's something like it comes across your mind. You say, okay, get that out, go and get a shift, get a hit, do all the right plays, get the game back going our way, and we'll see what happens.
Oh, exactly. I think, well, it's like you play the game long enough, and at the end of the day, nothing really surprises you, because there's way weirder things and way weirder goals that get scored all the time that you can never plan for or against, right? So it's not like somebody made an error. It happens all the time. So it's, you know, forget about it, put your work boots back on and get going. You know, we got a chance to finish these guys off, and tonight's the night that we should do it. So let's get on it and do it.
So you guys wind up going up 3-1, and sure enough, to Kevin's point, you know, you don't want to go back to Washington at 3-2, giving them a chance to tie the series. Cote ties the game early in the third period, but Brian Leetch, late third period, under 4 minutes left, winds up scoring from in close to win the series. And not to forget Richter here, kind of get some revenge on Hatcher. Huge save in the final 13 seconds to seal the series. So quite a finale.
Well, those two guys you just mentioned, Vic, Brian Leetch and Mike Richter, I mean, they were there before me. And I was just lucky enough to get a job that had a young Brian Leetch who just won the Calder Trophy, and a young Mike Richter, who was at that time played in Denver the year before in the Rangers minor league team. And I was blessed to have those two guys. And you know what? Starting when you start off and you've got those two guys handed to you, I mean, it was just a great thing. Like, just two great people and two phenomenal players.
Okay. It's got to be a huge exhale for the team. Just that they were able to kind of shed the curse of this nemesis, this franchise, which had been problematic from the day that they came into the NHL, and to walk out and win this series in five games. So, you know, you're through the first two in only nine games. What did this win in particular show about the character of this team? Because in the reality, this is the precursor of how difficult the next two series are going to be. This was the opening act.
Well, as I said earlier, having quicker series, although not easy series, and they never are, was in all likelihood what we needed. When I talked about, Game 7 against the Canucks, there happened to be, I want to say, 3 days in between Game 6 and Game 7 that gave an older team a little more rest and a little more juice than not that, and of course the Canucks were getting the same rest, but we were a much older team. So winning those two series like we did would certainly play in largely. We didn't know it at the time. But did know from experience it's always important to win series as quickly as you can. And I can't recall after we beat Washington if we knew we were playing the Devils right away or if they were rating for us, whatever. But I knew, particularly, I was happy. I was worried about the Capitals. And now we're there to win the Cup. But once you get to the semifinals, essentially you're playing with house money, right? You've done reasonably well. Now it gets to be fun. And although it was a little dicey there for a bit going into game six, we look back on that game since six against the Devils as just a lot of fun. You're going to battle. There's nothing better than going to in the opposition's building and win a big game on the road in the playoffs.
Steve, how is this playoff experience up until this point compared to anything that you had experienced before, including getting to the conference final against the Oilers? I believe it was in 1990.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, the hardest series, I think, for me has always been the first round is where all the upsets happen. And, you know, and it's tough when you're like, you know, one of the higher ranked teams or seeded number one or whatever, and you got to play against the eighth seed. And sometimes you get caught with your pants down and you lose those games. You lose that series, right? So the biggest upsets always, I think, happen in the first round. And then after that, the matchups become a little bit more even and the series becomes tighter and whatnot. So I think it's always, you know, getting through the first round and the second round as unscathed as you can. And for us to have done that, I think we played 9 games. Five against Washington and 4 against the Islanders, and not that they, and you know, and they're all tough games and against worthy opponents and stuff, but it gives you a little bit of a time to kind of catch your breath and prepare, you know, for what the you're there for the long haul. And your goal is to win the Stanley Cup, but you can't get in the mindset that you're in that fourth round. You got to earn your way to get there. And I think we did a really good job of, staying in the present. You know, we got the Islanders to deal with first. So let's deal with this series. Then against Washington, you know, deal with that series and prepare for whoever we might play in the next round, which obviously was the New Jersey Devils. So I think, you know, you get a little bit of time to catch your breath and enjoy it for a day or two. And then it's, you know, getting your head back into the game and getting mentally prepared to play another series.
Neil, last one for you. You're there before the Devils. Now the Devils are there. You're 6-0 against them in the regular season. Set the table for us entering what really became a series for the ages.
Well, just to remind everybody of that season, and you're doing a great job of that yourself, Vic, but they were the second best record in the league behind us. We weren't getting out of our division. Like, we play the Islanders in our division. Washington's in our division. Now we got to play the Devils that are in our division. They're all rivals. And there's all, you know, it's either win and do what is expected of you, but don't dare lose, because the you can't lose to these teams. And you know, the Devils were a darn good team. They were a great team. In fact, the reason why we won the President's Trophy, if you look back statistically, was because of the wins that we had against the Devils, both in the Garden, at the Meadowlands, and then on those neutral site games that we played them and beat them, like in Halifax, I think one of them was. So I think we all knew, at least from management standpoint, we knew, and I'm sure the players all knew, this was going to be tough. This was a really good team. I don't think, because we beat them all regular season, that anybody took the Devils for granted at all. I think it was, for me, I mean, I was just as scared as I always am. You know, I can't lose to these guys or they're going to kill me again.
Well, the table is set. 2 rounds down, 2 to go. So at this time, just on behalf of Neil, Steve, Kevin, thanks so much. Thank you to Migray and the Game 7 group. And our next show, the Series for the Ages, the Rangers and Devils in the Eastern Conference Final.
Thanks for joining us on the NHL Wraparound Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to stay up to date on all the NHL action.